Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Gail Martin and Carol Kelly. Each week, the ladies will bring you gardening and planting ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies and habitats, and great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Carol Kelly.
Hello again, everyone. I have several items to bring to your attention this morning. So let's get started with something that I'm sure most listeners have noticed. That is the increase of birdsong in the early morning. Many of the birds we're familiar with in Ohio fly to warmer climates for the winter and then return north to breed. At least 4,000 species of birds migrate worldwide, which adds up to about 40% of the entire avian population, and they all do it in pursuit of food, whether insects, seeds, or fruits, or whatever. Birds have been on the move north for a few weeks now, and the overnight migration traffic will continue to peak until mid-May, when we celebrate World Migratory Bird Day on May 14th. Although still a few weeks away, already there have been hundreds of millions of birds in flight over Ohio. Many people track these movements, and one website with nationwide information is Cornell University's Birdcast Migration Dashboard. If you go to their homepage, you can put in any place name to get local information. So, earlier this past week, I looked up the statistics for two consecutive nights for Marion County, Ohio. On Tuesday, April 21st, an estimated 61,800 birds flew overhead as we slept. That's an incredible number. But then, on Wednesday night, as thunderstorms swept through our county, the estimate was an even more astonishing 121,800. The Birdcast Migration Dashboard provides summaries of nocturnal bird migration patterns, including estimates of the total number of birds migrating, their direction, speeds, and altitudes, as detected by the U.S. Weather Surveillance Radar Network. Some birds head north as early as January, such as the white-throated sparrow and dark-eyed junco, two species that you commonly will see at your winter bird feeders. According to the chart I viewed, house wrens apparently prefer warmer weather and have only recently taken to the skies and are starting to appear. Bird migration forecast maps show predicted nocturnal migration from 3 hours after local sunset and are updated every 6 hours. Migrating birds regularly fly up to 10,000 feet above ground, although seasonal timing and weather conditions dramatically impact the distribution. Birdcast is made possible by participating scientists at various U.S. universities and many other contributors. Currently, Colorado State University and the Cornell Lab of Ornithology produce these forecasts. Go to birdcast.org to follow their links for maps and figures. No doubt that on the wonderful warm sunny days we've enjoyed off and on this spring, you have been aware of the avian traffic darting around whenever you're working outdoors in your yard. This is a sure indicator that nesting season is in full swing for a number of common species. I began to see vultures circling slowly above the treetops in Marion way back on February 18th. These have gradually been followed by some of our songbirds. And I mentioned in an earlier segment that I've been out to the overlook along Route 95 at Big Island for my annual visit to watch the tree swallows zooming around above the nest boxes built there for them. And they're still there. Red-winged blackbirds are once more balancing on tops of dried cattails there, and no one ever knows what assortment of waterfowl may be spotted in the flooded areas out there as well. Grackles showed up in my neighborhood a little earlier than I recall from previous years. Many robins never left here for the winter, but they did retire to wooded areas and subsisted on the many fruits of non-native shrubs such as Japanese barberry, privet, multiflora rose, and Amur honeysuckle that have invaded the wild spaces. This last especially is the bane of our Ohio woodlands and roadsides. The red berries of honeysuckle are much lower in nutrition than the fruits of our various native trees and shrubs, but birds eat the red berries in winter anyway. They're more of a survival food rather than a nutritious choice, providing little fat compared to native berries, kind of like we humans that can survive on junk food but not be in the peak of health. Common buckthorn, also known as European buckthorn, is another invasive shrub found throughout Ohio, the greater Midwest, and a large portion of the eastern United States. Its ability to colonize fence rows, fields, and neglected areas only rivals honeysuckle. Thanks to its tough constitution and rapid growth rate, it quickly produces copious amounts of black fruits on relatively young female shrubs. Buckthorn serves as the alternate host for a type of fungal rust that devastates oats and other cereal grains. There are a number of buckthorn shrubs at Sawyer Ludwig Park, along with the ubiquitous honeysuckle. Buckthorn berries also are considered a low-quality food source. They're high in sugar, and they're also extremely laxative. Of course, we have discussed before the importance of insects as food for birds, along with the importance of leaving leaf litter and tall cut stems of your perennial plants to provide shelter for the insects over winter that the birds need. Most of the time I've been using the word insects when I really should be saying arthropods in order to include the spider tribe, since these diminutive eight-legged creatures are just as important as other members of the large family that birds rely upon. I know I've talked before about leaving the leaves in my autumn segments of the Green Outdoors, and I want to once more point out that the connection between spider abundance and leaf litter also is critical. A recent study found that when fallen leaves are removed from a woodland or yard, spider numbers may decline up to about 76%. Leaves provide shelter, hunting grounds, and moisture stability for spiders, as well as the insects that the spiders, as well as the birds, feed on. When leaves are bagged and hauled away, the microhabitat collapses, and so does the prey base. Spiders are a particularly important food source in spring, since they provide taurine, a necessary nutrient that helps baby birds develop stronger brains. When people rake away the leaves, they're not just tidying a lawn. They're stripping away one of the most important nutrient sources for birds. Now I want to discuss the potted plants that have appeared outside our local grocery stores and home improvement stores recently. As usual, stores want to take advantage of our eagerness for green growing things, and the potted offerings certainly are enticing. But I want to advise listeners to try to hold off and resist the temptation to buy your bedding and vegetable plants now, unless you're prepared to keep them in their pots and cell packs for a while yet. While the daytime temperatures are forecast to be quite pleasant, night times will still be in the 40s for a while. If you do buy these plants, be ready to move them to a protected place when the frost threatens. Remember, we can't count on being frost-free yet, despite the occasional absurdly warm days that we've been tempted with recently. Our area's average frost-free date falls sometime in early to mid-May. This is based upon data from the National Center for Environmental Information's latest three-decade averages of climatological variables, something that they call climate normals, and maps that show frost-free dates for any area are available at a number of websites. We must bear in mind, though, that this information has been developed from the records kept from 1981 to 2010. And so, for the last 16 years that have passed, since that cycle of record-keeping ended, a new one began. We will not know how much this average may have changed until 2039, when records are once again re-evaluated. Most importantly, bear in mind that the word average means that while we may have seen the last of frost by the first of the month, we could conceivably experience temperatures below 50 degrees at night for several weeks beyond that, especially in these days of extreme weather events, so best to err on the side of caution. Weather patterns are changing, and gardeners must stay alert. That 50-degree mark is important because there are a number of plants that are damaged or stressed not only by frost, but even at temperatures below 50. This includes vegetables such as tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, and some of the annual Mediterranean herbs like basil, which, like the tomatoes with which it pairs so well, should not be planted until the soil is thoroughly warm. An old rule of thumb has been that it's safe to put these out if temperatures have stayed above 50 degrees overnight for at least 3 nights running. And according to the long-range forecast into early May, we still will have overnight temperatures in the low 40s, as I said, and even down into the 30s. In any case, the various plants we see for sale either have been raised in the relatively cozy environment of greenhouses or grown in southern states and shipped north, so they've not been hardened off properly to tolerate the cooler temperatures here in Marion County. So unless you have a suitable holding area, be prepared that you may end up having to repurchase bedding and vegetable plants if you set them out too early. Once we can be as certain as possible that the weather has settled, acclimate plants gradually in a sheltered place, protected from sun and wind for a few days or even a week before planting them in ground, but then have protective materials still at the ready, just in case. And here's another bit of advice, especially regarding the potted herb plants that I have seen for sale this past week while out shopping. Overplanted basil and parsley and others, priced at $5.98 per 4-inch pot. The seedlings in these pots are so crowded that they cannot possibly thrive and likely are too large at this point even to try to separate and replant them individually, whether into larger pots or in the ground. And right now, in any case, as I mentioned, it's too early to plant things like basil outdoors. Most potted annual herbs in garden centers always are overplanted. And for goodness sakes, don't ever buy those pots of cilantro or dill that you see. You're throwing your money away, since each very overcrowded pot would yield only enough of the herb for a single meal, and they're too crowded to be transplanted. You would be better off simply to go to the produce section and buy a fresh bunch as needed. When shopping recently, I saw generous bunches of cut cilantro in the produce section for only 99 cents. Parsley was $1.29, and a large bunch of mint for $1.99. I even saw nice-looking packaged bunches of fresh basil for less than the cost of the potted kind. Mint, by the way, will sprout roots very quickly from a few sprigs set in a jar of water, so you can plant your own, bearing in mind that mint is a very aggressive spreader, so you might want to plant it in a large pot in order to contain its enthusiasm. Better yet, for dill and cilantro both, just buy an inexpensive packet of seed and sprinkle just a pinch of each of the seeds in spots of open ground anywhere among your flowers or vegetable plants every few weeks for a continuing fresh supply. And don't forget those 10 free seed packets of your choice that anyone with a library card may obtain free at our Marion Public Library. Both dill and cilantro that I had allowed to go to seed in my herb bed last fall already are a couple of inches high. Their seed always overwinters just fine, so plan ahead this year and leave a couple of these plants to bolt at the end of this growing season and save yourself some work next spring. Of course, cilantro yields coriander seed, which is useful in many recipes, and many people will want dill seed included in their pickling recipes as well. Once you do have your basil and other herb plants like mint, oregano, or marjoram up and growing, keep them from flowering by pinching out the tips as soon as you see tiny flower buds forming, or even before. Pinch the plants even if you have no immediate use for fresh basil, although I cannot imagine such a thing in summer. To encourage the plant to keep producing until you have enough for a batch or two of pesto for the freezer. In fact, all herb plants, once established, benefit by being cut back regularly by about one-third, keeping them bushy and productive, even if you're not ready to use them. Finally, for those of you planning to add some native plants for pollinators, for a list of native plants in your area, simply go to the website of the National Wildlife Federation and type in your zip code to their Plant Finder search box. There, you also will find links to nurseries in each state that offer native plants. But of course, your first choice should be Gail Martin's Natives in Harmony near Marengo, the nursery of my partner for In the Green Outdoors. All of Gail's plants are grown on-site from seed sourced right here in Ohio. If you do visit others, though, however, as I know how tempting that is, be aware that many, if not most, also sell non-native and exotic plants and may not supply the additional information that you may want. So for now, this is Carol Kelly reminding you to garden for the birds, read your seed packets, and be discriminating as you peruse the plants offered by stores and nurseries when deciding what to plant this spring in the green outdoors.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it. Thank you for listening.